Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, first guest anyway, is Alexi Pappas. She's a writer, a filmmaker, Olympic athlete. She's written and co-written and starred in two movies, Tracktown and Olympic Dreams. She's a Greek-American and holds the Greek national record in the 10,000 meters. Her new book is called Bravey, Chasing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. And we want to hear from you as we talk with her. What do you want to know about what it takes to be an elite, become an elite athlete, or elite in other areas? How do you make sure you're dreaming big when it comes to your future? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Alexi Pappas, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. It is such a joy, and it is a great way to start my day, as I am in LA, and it might be a little earlier for me than it is for you, and it's wonderful to be here.
Well, it's so great to have you here, and I looked at your achievement. I've read your book, and I love your book, Bravey. By the way, it's wonderfully written, and we'll talk about it. I'm really kind of in awe of all your accomplishments. I mean, my goodness, how do you, some people would say, well, if you're an Olympian, that's an all-consuming goal, or maybe being a filmmaker, people might identify themselves as that, or they might identify themselves as an actress, or maybe as a writer. But I haven't seen too many people that would identify themselves with all of those. Those are big achievements. They are related, though, aren't they?
Totally, totally. I mean, I think there's a practical thing that's common between chasing any dream, and particularly in the arts and athletics, which is that I truly believe that we can be a student of, like, our dream and of our craft. And so I think I've approached the running and the writing and acting similarly, which is that I know I can improve if I just, you know, like, put time in and become a student of it. But also, I think you're talking about that Tracktown and Olympic Dreams are about, you know, an Olympic hopeful and an Olympian respectively. So they're definitely worlds that I know well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned your writing, and I understand that the title of your book came from one of your poems. Tell us where the word bravey comes from.
Yeah. So bravey comes from this poem that I wrote, which was something that I posted on social media, which is a lot of the way we communicate these days, which was run like a bravey, sleep like a baby, dream like a crazy, replace can't with maybe. And bravey, you know, fit into that poem well. But I think the reason why it stuck is because when I was growing up, I chased many outward-facing words. I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be pretty. I wanted to be fast. And those were all words that I presented to the world. And what bravey, I think, provides, and the way I feel about it, is that it's more inward facing, and it's a relationship we have with ourselves, and we can just simply choose to be a bravey. And so that's where that word came from.
Well, you certainly had a tough start in your life. Sorry to read early in your book that your mom took her own life when you were young after suffering from a mental illness. And then your dad raised you.
Yeah, yes, totally. So I lost my mom when I was almost 5, and it was a challenging first few years in the world, I think, because what I experienced was observing, you know, someone in pain and someone in bad pain, and someone who my perception at 5 years old of what she was going through was, you know, I just didn't understand it. And so I felt like maybe I didn't matter enough for her to stay. And it would come to, like, really define my motivation because I felt like I really wanted to matter. And I think, you know, that took me to great heights, like to be able to push through the pain of a race and make it to the Olympics certainly demands some like pain tolerance. But I think what I had to learn and what I talk about in the book is that I can't solve like an internal problem with an external solution. And I learned that, you know, the hard way with experiencing my own post-Olympic depression, you know? And so, but I think, you know, experiencing that at a young age also opened me up to a lot of mentors that I latched onto like a snail to a leaf. And I feel very lucky to have had so many mentors growing up.
I was amazed. You talk about the mentors, even as a young girl, I think it was Katie, one of your friends, you kind of latched on to her mother as a mentor.
Totally. I mean, you know, it's so special to look at like a young person because I feel like when we're kids, we just like are shamelessly mentor seeking. Like we admire people. We look up to pop stars and athletes and we imitate them. And I think I was just like that. And the only difference is that I think that muscle really never wore off for me. And I still, you know, look up to and admire and imitate people I admire. And I think that's a muscle we never have to lose, you know?
Yeah, it is indeed. Richard in Two Rivers has a question or a comment for you. Let's go there. Richard, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's Kathy, isn't it?
Alexi?
Oh, sorry. I was thinking
that's
about
okay.
Another runner. I wanted to ask you if, I mean, you ran, when in the Olympics you ran what? You ran the 1800?
10,000 meters.
That's a very difficult race. I mean, it's almost a sprint at the same time. Have you ever decided to go farther and do marathons, or have you done marathons?
Yeah, so I tried my first marathon, I think about 2 years after the Olympics, and I still feel like it's a mystery event to me. Like, it's one that I'm so deeply curious about and still trying to, like, wrap my head around. And I enjoy it. And I love that the marathon is one of those events that a lot of people have, like, a connection to, whether they run one or there's been a marathon in their town or their dad's run a marathon. And so I really love, you know, changing my focus here and trying to grow in a new event. It's been fun.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. Well, let's talk a little about you. 10,000 meters is, Richard's right, and you talk about this. I mean, it's painful. That's a long way to run, and you run it at, you have to literally run the whole thing, pretty much, don't you?
You definitely have to run the whole thing. And you even have to run at, you know, my pace was like close to 5 minutes a mile pace, and it's a 6.2 mile race. So it was really, you know, you're really moving, and it's kind of a race of attrition actually, which I think is interesting because some track races, you think about this like heroic sprint finish and that happens. But the more common, you know, pattern in a 10K is that you just want to hang in there long enough to be there at the end. And a lot of people end up, you know, falling off of the pace. That's usually what happens.
You talk about attitude and pain when you run. When anybody runs, and how is that overcome? Getting through.
Yeah. There's like definitely a lot about pain in Bravey, and you know, I think that there's a couple ways to approach it. I mean, the first thing is just to recognize when we're experiencing good pain versus bad pain. And good pain, you know, I associate with sport or with, you know, being in love or chasing a dream and like the pain that comes with that. Bad pain, I think, is more, you know, an injury or like a mental health illness like my mom experienced. So if it is good pain, right, like if we're just simply trying to make the decision to keep putting one foot in front of the other, then I think it's like it's okay. And then we can come to have a different relationship with good pain and like expect it, because any race and any dream we're chasing and really anything we're doing in life is going to bring some bouts of pain. And I think what I've tried to do is shift from being like offended by that pain to embracing it like an expected guest at my dinner party, and having, you know, a little bit of a, like an amused relationship with it rather than like an offended, bitter feeling about it, you know, and understanding that pain is a sensation, not a threat, if it's good pain.
If it's good pain. Jesse, our Lexi Pappas is our guest today. I'm pleased to have her with us. Her book is titled Bravey, Chasing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, I have a daughter who, Emily, who is a cross-country runner in high school and also plays soccer in high school. So she has... There, the similarity probably ends between you and her, but she loves her sports, and you had problems in that area a little bit when you were in high school, and it led to some interesting changes in your body that may have helped you down the road.
Yeah. So I ran track and cross country my freshman and sophomore year of high school, and I was also really interested in soccer. You know, I played competitive soccer and I loved student government and theater. And what I found was that the coaches at my high school were not encouraging of, they wanted every athlete to like specialize on the track team, and so they wanted me to quit all the other activities that I was interested in. And, you know, I understand focusing on a path when we're like maybe in college or beyond, but I think, you know, as a 15, 16 year old, I wasn't ready to specialize. And I was like, you know, not allowed to run on the team because I was not willing to specialize. And that was really heartbreaking for me because I, you know, running wasn't my favorite thing yet. I think I wanted to find, and I eventually did find, like a positive team environment and a coach that didn't feel like he was squeezing so tight on like the commitment, really, because I think that has to come from us, you know, when we're ready. But what it did allow for was I went through normal puberty, which a lot of athletes who run too much mileage too young or feel the pressure to peak at age, you know, 16, 17, 18, they miss out on those formative years. And, you know, the female athlete trajectory is one where we really don't peak as athletes until we're women, until we're in our, you know, 20s or 30s. It depends on the sport, I think, but certainly not at age 16. And so I allowed my body to really develop into that female athlete body by not pounding so many miles during those few years when I wasn't running. But it was certainly mentally challenging to, like, be told that I was doing something wrong by wanting to, you know, pursue multiple things as a, you know, as a teenager.
And the result for you was you were pretty much you know, not pain free, but injury free for, you know, right through to the Olympics, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, totally. You know, no injuries before the Olympics, which was like quite a, you know, I was what, 26 there. And so that meant that those formative years really built like a solid foundation and like also an athletic one. I think other sports, like every sport can help every other sport in some way. Right. And I think for these younger athletes, I hope that their coaches and parents and themselves really embrace like the transition between like childhood and adulthood and like allowing that body to like, to become the dense, strong, capable fortress that it can be, you know?
I do indeed. Alexi Pappas, our guest today, her book, Bravey, Choosing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Producer today, Natalie Guyette. Our on-air producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking with Alexi Pappas about her book today, Bravey, Chasing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. Again, join in, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You have a dual citizenship, and so you ran for Greece in the Olympics, and you had some good reasons for wanting to do that, I thought.
Yeah. So I'm Greek American by birth, and I had the honor of competing in the Olympics for Team Greece, and it was an amazing opportunity because it's a country where female athletics are, you know, beginning to be way more embraced, but certainly the female role models over there are far, you know, fewer than we have here, particularly in distance running. And so I was able to break a Greek record and be the first woman to compete in the 10,000 meters in any Olympic Games. And I think what was special about it is that the Greeks, you know, the Olympics mean something different to the Greeks. It really is like a tradition rooted there. And it was just really special to feel like I was a part of something and adding to a tradition that is so deeply rooted in their culture. And also, I think to set that example over there, you know, when I go to training camps, there aren't as many women who look like me. And I think to show like other young Greek girls that they can be athletes too, is a real privilege and pleasure of, you know, representing a country where there are fewer female role models. So it was very fun. And there were also other details about it that I get into in the book. But yeah, that was a life-changing experience.
Yeah, let's talk more about the book. The book is kind of like, it's an interesting way to write, and I love the book. But it seems to me to be like a series of essays that take you kind of through your life, but offer the opportunity to sort of go back and forth in your life within the essays.
Yeah. The book has like an emotional arc rather than a narrative arc. And that was like, one, it was my favorite way to write because it's structured in essays. And two, I think, you know, it helps show that our journeys to like chasing our dreams, I think they're often more circuitous and labyrinthian than people think or might assume based on seeing a social media post about your accomplishment, right? Like it can really lead people to think that you were always this way or there wasn't this like unlikely journey. And so I tried to go into as much detail as possible and paint like the strokes where you can either deduce or like assume that it wasn't, you can know that it was like a much more, you know, winding path. Right,
yeah.
To those pinnacles.
And the book is in part about your own struggle with depression after you competed in the Olympics in 2016. Do you remember when it clicked for you that what you were experiencing was depression?
Yeah, so I truly think, you know, the vocabulary is everything, and I did not have the vocabulary to understand depression before I experienced it. And like, I remember the narrative that was fed to me about my own mom taking her life was like that she was so sick that she like had to go. And it was really sad to me. And I didn't understand how it could be this like foregone conclusion like that. And when I experienced, you know, these symptoms, I didn't recognize them as depression. And I also was afraid that it was because I felt like if it was, then there would be no solution. And it was really my dad who had seen my mom go through this and who recognized, you know, that in me, and he made me get help. And this was like a couple months in, and I was already like feeling really, you know, confused and also blaming myself for what I was feeling because I thought that I needed to fix this by myself. And then I met this doctor, and he told me quite simply that I, you know, was sick and had a scratch on my brain, and that it was just like when you fall down rollerblading and you get a scratch on your knee. I had a scratch on my brain, and that it would take time to heal, but it could heal just like any other body part. And it really clicked for me that my brain was a body part and that I could heal.
And I liked how he explained it to you in terms of the process. I think he said first your actions change, then your thoughts change, and finally your feelings change. I believe that's
exactly
what he said.
Yep, exactly. And that was really helpful to me because, you know, you don't feel great every day. You feel like sad. And it's kind of like, again, going back to that body metaphor, like let's say your leg is broken. You're going to feel broken. Like it's going to be a little painful every day for a long time, but that doesn't mean it's not healing. And so I think by telling me to focus on my actions, it allowed me to actually, you know, have something productive to do. And also it's true that your actions do, you know, catalyze thoughts, which catalyze feelings, right?
Yeah. And even though you write about mental illness, and many challenging things, your tone is always confident, kind of calm. Mm. It seems like it's almost like you've trained your brain along with your body, the rest of your body. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, that's such a nice compliment. It reminds me of like one of the people who blurbed the book, Tara Schuster. She said that I'm like a very kind knife, and that was like the greatest compliment. And you know, like I think there's something about like, you know, the person who we read about in a book or like that we see in a movie is not the person who is not the same person who like writes the movie or writes the book, right? Like the person who wrote the book is like comes after all the events and experiences and lessons that you read about in the book. And so I don't think the person in the book could have written the book. I think it was like the product at the end. And that's one of the great challenges and pleasures of writing is like trying to find the words to communicate clearly and succinctly about an experience that I had. And I really appreciate your note about the tone and the calmness of it, because I tried very hard to do that.
You know, I interviewed another Olympian, Jessie Diggins. She has a book out.
Oh, I love Jessie. Yeah.
Her book, Brave Enough. And I thought about her. I mean, it's a different kind of circumstance that she went through. But I don't know if you've read her book. But
and she's wonderful.
Yeah, and I guess I was probably drawn to it because, all right, she was an Olympian too. She grew up in a different kind of situation, family situation at least, than you did, I think. But came out of it on the other end with her problems, I think is, you know, kind of like you did. And so it's another, actually, I enjoyed that book as well. And I, if you haven't had a chance to read it, you might take a look at it. I'm going to go back to mentors for a little bit. Because as a professor at the University of Wisconsin, I sometimes have been, I've mentored people. But it was so important to you to have mentors and throughout your entire life. How do you pick one, and what qualities do you look for in a mentor?
Yeah, well, you know, so I think I use the word mentor super liberally in that I will, you know, find people that I admire and try to be around them if I can. And that, you know, that might be like my friend's moms or a big, you know, friend's older sister or, you know, a professor or something like that, or a coach. And, you know, in those people, in any mentor, you look for people who have qualities or habits or you know, energy that you admire, that I admire. And if it's someone I don't know, like it's someone who I like look up to from afar, like a satellite mentor, I still try to be around them. And that's why, you know, I think interviews like this and podcasts and audiobooks are a really wonderful place to find satellite mentors. And so even when I'm like training in the mountains and Mammoth Lakes in the middle of nowhere, and I'm not necessarily like, I mean, there I have mentorship in my teammates, but maybe I also seek out mentorship from afar. And I think what I'm looking for are just people who are chasing their dreams in other worlds. Like I really like, you know, I admire great chefs and people at the peaks of other worlds, because it's not so much about imitating what they do. It's trying to imitate and learn from how they think, right?
Yeah. Well, you stress throughout the book that it's important to take your dreams seriously. Do you think that's something that a lot of people do miss out on? And why, maybe?
Yeah, I think that some, you know, I think every dream that anyone has, as long as it's like not hurting anybody, is like worth chasing. And the only thing I think standing in our way, you know, save for hopefully not systematic barriers, which I think, you know, we need to address, is the decision to when a hurdle or a challenge comes, to not see that as a reason why your dream is impossible. And I think some people who might have a dream can think that the dream is impossible simply because there are some challenges. And that's where that like turning can't into maybe, I think, is super important, but also just stubbornly pressing onward and pivoting and, you know, deciding that this is a commitment that you're making rather than just a hobby that you're chasing. Or maybe it's a hobby and that's fine. But if it's truly something that like you want to go and get full on, I think, you know, we can take our dreams seriously, meaning we can always decide that a barrier is not an end point, you know?
Yeah. You received a lot of messages from a young age about your body's expiration date, your limited time to be great. Maybe you could talk a bit about some of the biases of the running world, maybe elite sports in general, still holds against women.
Yeah, like I think what you're talking about is like there were a couple of messages. I mean, one that perhaps, you know, women peak at a younger age than we really do. And I think there's just like a misunderstanding about kind of the difference between, or really like when our bodies like are able to peak. And I think it's a lot, it can be a lot older than we think it is. And, you know, I had some sponsor opportunities where there was one scenario where like a male CEO expressed to me that like they wanted to sign me, and that if in a couple months, this is when I was 21, by the way, not even close to even going to the Olympics yet. And they were like, and if we think that you're maybe, you know, past your prime in a couple months, then you can still help make advertisements for us because you like making movies. And I remember feeling really like grateful on the one hand that they valued me beyond my running. But on the other hand, I was like, wait a minute, this is the time when I want to like begin chasing my Olympic dream. And I don't really want the team I'm on to think that it's even a possibility that tomorrow or in a month from now, I might have expired. And it was hard to hear because you want stability and you want that, but you also like, we need to know that, one, like we need to dictate our own goal. And my goal was to train for the Olympics, not to make commercials at that age. And two, I needed to understand that I wasn't peaked yet. And I believed that intuitively, but it was sad that the narrative being fed to me was something different, you know?
Yeah. And this whole business about ability and hard work is something that comes to play. I it was kind of fun. You had a wonderful experience with President Obama, meeting him at one point, and actually got into a little discussion about ability versus hard work. So you're a hard work person.
Yeah, he, like, so my brother worked for the White House, and there was this opportunity to meet the president when my brother left his job. And he, so President Obama, my brother introduced me as this, you know, elite Olympic runner. And he turned to me and said that I, you know, must have been born to do this, or I was born to do this. And I thought it was really interesting because I have always felt like it's a lot of hard work, and not, I've never like tried to think about inborn gifts because those are things that I can't really know and I can't control. But I also, you know, learned later that President Obama himself, you know, had these basketball dreams. And eventually I think he found that maybe no matter how hard he worked, there were some genetic or some limitations to making it to the NBA. And it was interesting to me because I think, you know, and that chapter goes a lot into this puberty stuff that we were talking about, but it's interesting to think that there is something that we're born with, right? But it is only valuable and useful with our hard work. And I think it was just a really interesting interaction. I mean, I would say the interaction itself was life-changing because being around an energy like that was just palpable. I mean, that's like totally separate from what he said. It's just he's a presence, and to be around someone like that was just remarkable. But what he said was interesting too, you know?
Utah, you know, I every chapter in your book has a message, that a takeaway message in it. I found myself just jotting down little notes from your chapters. You have some good advice, and you sort of, in your one of your last chapters, or maybe your last chapter, you talk about pursuing goals and dreams, and including using your imagination, imitating others who have what you want. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, like about just more about this mentorship piece.
More about what does a person need to do? Think about that last chapter you wrote, or one of the last chapters.
Yeah. Okay. So I think what you're asking is like, what does someone need to do to chase their dream? And I think there are some like really like practical steps, and you know, admitting that we want something is one of the bravest things we can do because there's no guarantee that we get it. But admitting that you want it is the first step. And then, you know, figuring out exactly what we do need and what we don't need to get to that goal. And that's probably the most important thing, because if we, you know, have a dream of going to the Olympics, for example, and then we're presented with like one opportunity that provides us like a coach and, you know, trails to run on and running shoes and enough food, or, you know, to live. And another option is just like a really big paycheck. You know, it can be really tempting if we don't know exactly what we need to just take a paycheck. But the truth is, like, we don't need to be rich to get to the Olympics. We need to run well, and we need to have enough of those resources. And so that's just an example of why knowing what we need before we enter the world, which is going to feed us a million other ideas about what we need, will be important. And then, you know, I mean, there's just steps, like knowing that a lot of it is really unglamorous, and a dream comes true very, very slowly and then all at once. And I think, you know, there's some hard truths in there too, just that it's on us to keep making the decisions that will be in our favor, including when we have a setback. And just deciding, okay, if there's an injury or other setback along our dream, that somehow we must use that time while we're injured so that our later selves will rewrite that history to be in our favor, like to always feel like a winner somehow, or that the universe is like in our favor rather than a reason why our dream is impossible. So there's more in there, but those are some of the highlights, I think.
Those are good ones. And when you have many dreams, as you do, how you approach those dreams was really interesting to me, and achieving, you know, the ways that you work. I think at the end, near the end, you talked about, well, when I'm running or training, then on a training day, I'm not going to be writing. Seriously.
Yes. Like, so, right. And that's the thing. I think that's a good point, is that from the outside, it can seem like I'm doing all these things at once. And the truth is that I'm doing one thing at a time and trying to hyper focus on that thing, whether it's training or writing or acting, and then able, you know, to organize and shift focus. But it's not like everything is happening at once. And I think that's like a big, like, thing that I want people to know, because otherwise it would just be misinforming them about how to chase their own multifaceted dreams, or if someone's balancing even just like, you know, a family and work and maybe running or whatever they want, to know that, like, it's important to allow ourselves the time to shift focus and be in the moment we're in, you know, because that's the only way we're going to reach great heights in those worlds, you know?
Well, here's a question that somebody else wanted me to ask you, and I hadn't thought about it, but it's one you're probably asked about. You tell us about your signature hairstyle. Can you describe it and how it come to be? Just to close things out.
So, I love it. So my hair, I always wear it in a bun, my bravey bun, and I think that just kind of comes back to our conversation about mentors, where it's just this, I mean, I find it very practical, but I think it's a way to share with the world something that's like easily imitatable. Like, just like when I was younger and I wore sweatbands to be more like Mia Hamm, I think that wearing a hairstyle like your mentor, if I'm anyone's mentor, it can be like a good way to just connect and feel like we're satellite teammates and it's like a gift of confidence, right? Like when I wear my Mia Hamm sweatband when I'm little, that makes me feel more confident, and I hope that the bravey bun can do the same.
Well, looking ahead, what's next for you? What are you working toward?
Yeah. So, you know, this book, I hope it finds its way into people's hands. I think people will really love it. And I'm training, so we're going to have to see what happens with the Olympics coming up. And that's been fun. So marathon on my mind. And then a television project that I'm really excited about. TV is a new medium for me, coming from the feature world. So I have a really exciting television project relating to that Olympic experience, and then another movie in the works. So it's kind of like the same, but the next step of everything, you know?
Well, I tell you what, your book is wonderful. I really enjoyed reading it, and I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today, talking about it and about your life. Thanks, Alexi.
I'm so grateful. Thank you to everyone, and thank you for having me.
Alexi Pappas, her book is called Bravey, Chasing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. And there are a lot of big ideas in her book, and it's really some compelling reading, and I think you're going to enjoy it, whether you're an athlete or not. A lot of it's not really about, it's about running, certainly plays a big role, but it's not all about that. It's about many other things that I think any of us can take as clues for our own lives. Well, speaking about books written by and about people of African descent can be difficult to locate. Our next guest created a website that makes the search much easier, and we'll talk with him next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.